podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello, so we're in the final furlong with game week one just touching distance away. Wowie, yes, a mercifully truncated preseason is about to give way to the season proper, with this podcast, for one, looking forward to there being actual football to talk about rather than being speculation and fluff. I bet you feel the same, right, Anthony?
Oh, absolutely.
But first, he's back. It's Nick after missing last week, but no doubt raring to go on this edition of WGTA. Nick, you're right, mate. Good to see you. That beard is getting out of control now.
Oh, yeah. It's a lockdown still going on, technically. Still working from home, so the beard is just getting longer and longer and longer. I don't really have a plan to shave it.
Tends to get you to make another Twitter account for it and announce we've got a fourth co-host.
Perhaps. But yeah, it's so close now, isn't it, to the start of the season. Definitely feeling like we're reaching that stage now where we're looking at our FPL team, starting to panic, you know, thinking about, oh, are we happy with this guy? All last minute changes kicking in, all that sort of thing as we question our strategies. And we're going to talk a little bit about strategies in this pod. So who are we? We are Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook. Also on Instagram, if you want to give us a follow there. We've joined relatively recently, wgta.fpl is the account there. Yeah, welcome new listeners. If you enjoy the pod, hit subscribe. And if you like what you hear as well, we'd really appreciate a nice review, perhaps a five-star review. That would be really, really great. So thanks for all the listeners as well who've given us reviews already. Really appreciated. And if you want to join our mini league as well, the code for this season is CPSULF. It's always a very competitive mini league, and we might give some prizes out this year. We haven't fully arranged that, but possibly do something.
We're going to cut your beard off and we're going to deliver it in the post.
Perhaps. I'm sure people would appreciate that. Anyway, Anthony, how are you then?
Evening, lads. Good to be back with you again. I was looking at Twitter earlier today, and it's genuinely, I think, the first time I bothered paying attention to people's drafts. And it's definitely good to know that a pandemic and a few weeks off hasn't affected Twitter's groupthink. So lovely to see that. Anyway, game week one is indeed upon us, but this is definitely tactically much more challenging than seasons yonder, given that we're kicking off with this blank game week with no less than both Manchester clubs absent. So what we're going to be doing in this pod is basically looking at our strategy on how we're going to deal with the start of the season, and then we move on to listener contributions and our questions and answers round.
Yeah, indeed. It's definitely a bit of a puzzler, isn't it? I think a few years ago, we had Chelsea playing in the Super Cup. So I think they missed the first game, but that was in 2012, 2013, something like that. So, you know, here we are with United and City alongside the Clarets in Burnley and Villa, missing that game week one fixture, which leads us to a few different strategies, I guess, that managers are considering to navigate this early puzzler. Today, we're going to be looking over those strategies and thinking, you know, what are we adopting? What do we think is best, but at the same time it's always up to you to look over what you're most comfortable with, I think, because I think one of the key sort of watchwords over all of this is that it really depends on your play style and what is most comfortable to you starting with, just because, you know, there's no right or wrong answer right now. For the benefit of hindsight, we may see what the best thing to do was, but as it stands there are quite a few different options that you could go with to approach this this start of the season, and it's very hard to say you're definitely wrong, but there are maybe some kind of critiques or arguments for and arguments against that may resonate with you. So definitely bear that in mind when making a decision about how you're going to do it. And indeed, you may already have decided what you fancy. So the strategies we're going to be looking at today, I've given them a few names. Big at the bench, we've always will go for a big at the something, don't we? Doomsday prepping / booking, game week one is a free hit, and flexible working, probably in the spirit of the COVID context. To start with, I suppose, let's go into big at the bench. So there are a couple of questions related to this, just to give you an idea of what we mean by this, although it probably is fairly obvious. FPL Captain Fail asks, what's your thoughts on going into game week one with United or City asset for game week two? He says, you know, he's got Fernandes or Greenwood on the bench, but he's not too sure yet. He's not too sure if they can go with it. And Chico Jimenez says, if we're not planning to wildcard early, which are the best options to start with on our bench to save transfers? So this big at the bench is obviously the idea that you're starting with a City and or United, probably United because that game week two, Crystal Palace game, player on your bench and maybe a Burnley player and maybe a Villa player. So basically you're using 4.5 million defender or a cheap midfielder or something to cover you through game week one, but you know you're held back and you're saving that transfer in game week two rather than booking one in as the doomsday prepper one would be. Big at the bench, what do you guys reckon to this? I'm on it, spoilers, but I want to get your thoughts first before I go into why I think it probably is the best approach, at least for me.
So I'm probably going to be a little bit more negative towards this strategy in true style compared to you guys, because I'm not actually a huge fan of it. I know that you've definitely been considering it. For me, I just don't like the idea of benching a high-value asset in week one. I feel like in game week one, you're almost instantly putting yourself in the back foot, giving yourself a disadvantage compared to some of your rivals. And for me, I look at game week one, I look at the fixtures and I want to set up for the best team possible. So putting as many heavy hitters in my team, for instance, I've got the likes of Vardy in there and Werner alongside some other big players like Salah and Aubameyang. And I look at that team and I think actually that looks like a really strong team. I'm very happy with that for game week one. I don't want to have a sort of a 9 million man like Martial sitting on the bench, or a 9.5 million man like Rashford or even a Bruno. And meaning I'm having to sacrifice my starting 11 and having sort of very, very cheap enablers in there, you know, 5 million, 5.5 million forwards or whatever, to try and make that happen. So I prefer at the moment putting in a strong starting 11, a strong starting team for game week one, and then looking forwards to the, you know, using my transfers to bring in the players that then I'd want to bring in for Manchester United in the next week, you know, doing a transfer straight away perhaps, yeah, rather than benching someone.
So it's interesting. I think I would echo Nick to definitely a large extent when it comes to this big at the bench strategy. Now, maybe my reasons are a little bit different in that I feel that having a bench every game week is something that seems like pretty clearly going to be needed right now, especially coming off the back of this international break where there seems to have been COVID. There are COVID fears, if not COVID positives, and have been discipline issues as well. It seems that trying to go into any game week with, let's say, 12 outfield players potentially available for your team, not including blank players, obviously, it seems a little bit tight to me. And as well, then there is the whole problem of just having so much value on your bench. Like you want to do well every week, and no more than any game week one is an important one to kind of get your season started and not to be starting on the back foot. I'd much rather be trying to react and get United or City players in as they hit in form rather than spend a week where I know that I'm not going to get any points for them starting off. So rather than have those City United players in my squad starting, instead I'm just going to kind of hedge across the big teams and give myself that space to budge across to your City or United players. So I have, for example, Son, Aubameyang, Salah and Werner in my squad right now. One of them won't have been good in the first 2 weeks probably, but I'll be happy enough to sell. And I'm kind of hedging on one of them being a bit disappointing and making a clear transfer for me.
Right. No, I see what you mean. I think it's just, I mean, Nick, you said, you know, if you're starting on the back foot and all this sort of thing, I think it kind of works both ways though, because if you've got that Martial character, whatever, on your bench, all the way down to Greenwood potentially, surely you can be proactive rather than reactive with your transfers, and you're just booking in what you're doing next, because you're pretty much saying, okay, one of these guys is saying, Anthony, has got to go in order to fit Martial in. And I personally don't feel particularly comfortable with that. And to me, it feels like kind of during the proper season, as it were, like if there's a blank fixture, but you want to keep that player because they've got good fixtures coming up. Like, I think that that's kind of the way I'm looking at it with keeping Martial there. And like,
but so often the reason why you'd keep a player in a blank in the mid-season is because of a value issue as well. You know, you sell them, yeah, it's going to be much harder to get them back. It's nowhere near as big of an issue now. And like, what are those players going to be like in, you know, 2 weeks when they actually get around to playing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just think it's worth highlighting the fact that you can be proactive rather than reactive with the transfers. Like, you're not going to be in a position where you're covering yourself. You're not going to be in a position where you're trying to kind of figure out your new team setup if suddenly it looks like in game week three, this is, I'm saying, you're going to need to try to fit in a Bruno plus try to fit in a Man City kind of player. So I feel like kind of I'm one step ahead in terms of the transfers, although I appreciate what you're saying about, as Nick was saying as well, having being a slight on the back foot that I've got a 4.5 million defender on where he's got a Son on. That does not seem particularly nice. The reason I'm doing it is just I'm trying to find ways to preserve transfers, and I'm trying to find ways to basically preserve that wild card ultimately. Like the whole idea is of my start of the season is to get to game week three and then assess what I do. That's basically it. But this is all kind of clothed in the idea of preserving my wild card. Like the logistical geniuses of James from Planet FPL and Ben Crellin have basically pointed out that wild card 16, 18 and 19 use all of that. I'm not going to go for the convoluted ins and outs, to be honest. But for so what of that is that the wild card seems a fabulous way to navigate that sort of issue at the end of the season. So for now, I think I want to give myself the option to kind of just go into the season with like a plan in place to deal with what I'm missing in game week one and game week two without using that transfer. And in game week three, I can make proactive rather than reactive transfers for two free transfers. That just seems to me like a nice little solution to the problem I've got.
Obviously, using, because I think you're going for Martial, using sort of the similar price point player that I was going to have instead of a Martial type character, which is Vardy. If he does really well in game week one, I think you'd potentially be tempted by him looking at his fixtures of Burnley at home, Man City away, West Ham at home, Aston Villa at home. And, you know, you could already be on the back foot thinking, actually, my entire plan is already in ruins for, you know, because you can't fit this guy in because you've already backed yourself in with a player who hasn't even started the season. And, you know, there's question marks there as well. But just sort of to answer the questions as well, I think with Chico Jimenez, so for me, personally, I would say if you're going to pick someone, maybe someone like Charlie Taylor would be a good pick, perhaps to someone who could just be a bench fodder type character. And then you've got your Burnley defence sorted, especially, and we've got a question of 4.5s later, but especially considering that the 4.5 million defenders seem to be dying a death but one by one at the moment. And with Captain Fail, I prefer his sort of the Son and 1.5 million strategy to having a Fernandes or Greenwood on the bench for the sort of reasons that I've stated. But, you know, we don't all seem to be in agreement on this one. I've got my stance, which is kind of a bit more flexibility as opposed to having transfers booked in.
Yeah, for what it's worth as well to Chico Jimenez, I actually have Aaron Wan-Bissaka on my bench currently. He's the only blank game week player that I would have in my game week one squad. He could switch to Luke Shaw or any other Man United defender, to be honest with you. It's just, look, he offers quite good value at 5.5. Should be a nailed-on starter. And United were the best defence in Project Restart in terms of expected goals conceded from open play, which I think is the fairest metric to assess them based on. And Crystal Palace's attack is largely non-existent. So I'd fancy them to get that clean sheet to start off, even if they're not necessarily on song and flying in an attacking sense, being a bit rusty coming in game week one.
No, I still just don't particularly mind the whole idea. I've actually got a 4.5 million defender of one of the teams as well, plus at the moment Martial, but Christ knows if he's got COVID or anything right now, with Mbappe this evening being diagnosed. But at the moment, my plan is to have a United attacker of some description occupying a spot on my bench. And I mean, I still think that that's a decent way of approaching it, whether that ends up being naughty boy Greenwood, whether that ends up being Martial, whether that ends up being somebody else remains to be seen. I think that Rashford or Bruno on my bench probably is a bit too far. You end up with a seriously diluted game week one. What I like about Martial at 9.0 and maybe Rashford just about, but Martial particularly, is that he gives you like a decent enough game week squad, I think, to be getting on with in that first game week. It really sounds like it's just down to how you assess the situation, which, as I said at the beginning, is probably going to be the one thing that holds sway over how you look at things. But for me, you know, having those initial sort of players on the pitch and then taking them off game week two for the likes of Martial to come on, it just suits my the way I've planned it. But yeah, so another way of doing it is kind of prepping or booking in a sort of doomsday prepper sort of thing, for anyone who's seen that on Netflix. But FPL Net Assets asks, tongue-in-cheek, if FPL will mess with the algorithm to keep the United/City prices stable, because obviously there's loads of people who are doing the opposite of me. So they're not benching a United asset. What they're doing is they're kind of saying either, you know, I'm going to bank loads of money, you're big at the bank, I called this, but probably not quite right, to buy someone in game week two. Or they're doing something like this. So they're starting with Danny Ings, say, with 0.5 million in the bank, so they can swap them to Martial. I think for some people as well, like just kind of looking around and some of the plans that I've heard, there's more bookings than the venture holiday for a lot of people. I don't really quite get that, because it feels like it's a very strange way of looking at FPL if you're kind of saying, right, game week one, my game week one to two chances already booked, game week two to three chances already booked. You're kind of thinking, well, FPL is really dynamic, right? I'm now getting into how I feel about this, I know. But FPL is an incredibly dynamic game. Like, what do you do if your players are firing? What do you do if another player then jumps the queue? Like, then you're kind of thinking, well, I had the transfer booked in, but I've also got to do this. And now I've got to take a hit. I've got to do this, got to do that. It just makes me feel personally uncomfortable in a way that big at the bench does not. So for me, even though I can see the value perhaps in kind of starting with an Ings or starting with a Werner and then downgrading them, I just don't like it. I feel like it's kind of tying up a transfer when loads of other things could possibly happen, especially in the COVID context. Prepping, booking, what do you guys reckon?
See, for me, I've been thinking about this booking idea and I've just thought back to seasons past when there wasn't a pandemic going on and how I never managed to stick with the plan that I'd set out initially pre-game week one. By, let's say, game week three, there's always so many, you know, fires that emerge in your squad. The player you took in a punt in that you're not happy that you with anymore. The player who's hit form that you just, you know, let's say the player you didn't pick that's hit form that you probably now need to get into your squad, if even just to cover yourself and to make sure you get value. The fact of the matter is we have a transfer window that's ongoing as well. That's going on till October 5th. There's so many players that are bedding into squads and we're not sure like whether they're going to start initially or maybe after a few weeks and how they're even going to play your James Rodriguez types. So like, there's just like too many factors for me to consider trying to, you know, book my transfers in it. As you say, Tom, it's just too rigid for me.
I thought you actually might be more of an advocate for this strategy there, Anthony, but I think I don't like the whole idea of the big in the bank. I know we kind of decided not to address that too much, but I think the whole concept on sitting on a chunk of money is even worse than big at the bench, really, because you're just booking in the transfer that you're going to have to force to be done. And then if you've got a scenario, you've got 4 million at the bank at the start of the season and Salah gets injured, for instance, you're going to still have that 4 million in the bank for game week two, likely. And you just end up not knowing what to do with the money. And I think if you kind of sit on a sort of 0.5 million in the bank and you're planning to do Ings to Martial, I don't know about that either. You know, there's so many circumstances could take place. You know, there could be early rises for Martial that catch you out because of the price rises and the price changes, people flocking towards the Manchester United players. I think this algorithm question is a similar question to your FPL General's last prod, and I tend to agree with the sentiments that he made there, just in regards to like FPL and the AFPL. We've seen them manually adjust and, you know, adjust with the algorithm, make little slight changes to prevent crazy price rises in the past. So I would be surprised if we saw like a Manchester United player's triple rising in that 1 week. I think it'll be handled quite sensibly to avoid the market going too crazy there.
I've seen a lot of people going, oh my God, you know, game week two, everyone's going to be jumping in on the City players, United players, they're going to be up by 0.1 by Sunday night. Oh my God, what are we going to do? I'm going to book in my transfers on Saturday. I'm going to make it straight away. And I'm kind of thinking, actually, like, we've got this afterglow of what it was like at the end of the season last year when it was just the engaged players playing, right? It was just the people who were well up for it, really engaged, knew what they were doing. At the start of the season, is it like that? No, not at all. You've just got loads of less engaged managers who are involved. I appreciate some of them, maybe some of the new listeners here are now trying to kind of tool up a little bit from there. But you do have a lot of people who are just going to be reacting to what's happened in game week one and may kind of just not have the bandwidth to kind of think, okay, these players aren't playing game week one, and that they may be United fans. They may have gone, all right, I'm going to go for Rashford, Bruno. You know, I'm going to then throw in Kevin De Bruyne because he was really good last year. And then they find, oh no, all these players haven't played, so they're going to transfer them out for the players who have played and have scored. Like, I know that sounds really silly, but I suspect to somebody who's not as into it as we are, a lot of those people are going to be very, very kind of active in the market. So if anything, there may be kind of this kind of countervailing force of people jumping on United and City assets. Actually, there may be a lot of people who are selling them as well, just by dint of the fact they haven't played in game week one. But that's the reality of the market in game week one. So I wouldn't be too worried about those kind of price rises. And I don't know, maybe Nick, there's an element of that in what General was suggesting, that maybe they do kind of jimmy it a little bit just to make sure it's not particularly mad. But I mean, are there any positives to this strategy, Stag? I feel like we've all kind of expressed our negative feelings towards it. But I mean, Nick said it may be a Stag strat. Any positives you can discern from it? Because I'm sure there are people doing it.
I could see why Nick would think it would be a Stag strat, because definitely in periods where I've been struggling and trying to play catch up, I've definitely, you know, looked to fixtures more so than form or reputation when, you know, deciding on transfers. So I can see why he would think that, and I think that is still the benefit with this strategy, that it of course allows you to adapt to who's got the plum fixtures and probably allows you to get a captain obvious into your team for a more one-off fixture. That would be, I would say, the large benefit of big at the back. I think you're starting to arrange deck chairs on the Titanic if you're, you know, have planned in moves for your 4.5 defenders or your 5.5 midfielders. But when you're, you know, moving around your premium assets to try and, you know, get those good fixtures, that is you know, there's clearly a route to success there if it comes off for you. Just the problem is that when you've got a highly prescribed plan, and as we talked about in last week's pod, when price fluctuations are at their worst at this part of the season, usually, as we noted, with, you know, cheaper midfielders and forwards who are going down one as opposed to players who are going up one. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the margins are pretty tight on value at this time of the year, and 0.1 can feel like 0.5. And my fear is that Definitely. Even if you've got a really good plan put together, it could be hard to actually pull it off, even if it is the best laid plan.
No, I know what you mean. I think it's almost like with the fact that I've got Martial there, it's like I don't need to then make another move to make that plan happen. So I'm on step two already. Whereas if you're starting with the idea of booking in transfers, it feels like you've got to hope that loads of things come together. Whereas for me, it's kind of just like, all right, one game week, it might be a little bit dodgy with the likes of Vardy, as Nick mentioned, doing something that might be a bit annoying. But game week two, the cavalry is here, provided they aren't, of course, COVID-related absentees, I suppose. But yeah, okay, so we're not too sure about that one, but I can kind of see why you might be going for that. I think we're running out of things this could possibly be, guys. We're on number three, and neither of you have said, this is what I'm doing yet. The next one is game week one is a free hit. And wildcard in game week two. So I've heard this kind of discussed around the podosphere, I suppose, the likes of Josh Paxman from surgery, and I think Josh Moore is cheating as well. Maybe it's a Josh thing favouring this. And I can definitely see the benefits of this. So you jump on those mad kind of transfer activities in game week two, and you make an absolute killing in terms of team value. And Anthony relayed this last week, actually, in the podcast with Lee and Sam, because, you know, talking about how a vast majority of team value rises are made, actually, by game week 15, I think. That's where the majority of your transfer value is going to be made. But, I mean, it's a bit of a sprint start, isn't it? I guess that's kind of what people are going for. But do we think that that's going to be enough of a positive, or will it lead to a saggy end once those who wildcard later have their moment? Nick, what do you think about saggy ends?
So this whole idea was actually one that I think on the last pod I was on, I was saying that I was planning an early wild card. This was kind of what I was proposing that I would do with my own team. Yeah, and I was quite tempted to do this. I feel like with the recent developments, I'm kind of a little bit less sure about this whole idea at the moment. It's mostly so many players seem to be getting coronavirus or COVID-19 at the moment, aren't they? We've had several announcements today. I think we saw Mahrez and Laporte yesterday. You know, likes of Souček as well, from Czech Republic, left the squad. I think the whole Czech Republic team had to leave and be isolated. So, and obviously Mbappe today, as you mentioned, Tom. So I think that is my concern here. And I don't think it's just necessarily going to be cancelled players, so to speak. It'll be cancelled fixtures as well, potentially. But on the other hand, we talked about this being a risk, game week 30 to 38, didn't we? And we didn't see a single cancelled fixture. So, you know, it maybe is, you know, not going to be a concern. It's just going to blow over when all the players come back from their holidays and stuff like that. So it's not something I'm planning on doing now. I think it kind of made sense for me at the time when I was advocating it, the whole idea of getting in those Manchester United, Manchester City players. I quite like the idea of saying, actually, I could have a team in game week two and just bang in Bruno, Martial, Greenwood for that Crystal Palace. And, you know, that could be the kind of game that you look at United getting four goals against them, brace for each of them or whatever, a couple of assists, you'll be flying. And that's kind of where I was leaning at. City as well, you could be loading up on De Bruyne and Sterling nice and early, but their fixtures aren't as good. It's more about the Manchester United fixtures at the start of the season, I guess. So I think that's why I was kind of going for it at the moment. But I think I'm kind of moving away a little bit because I'd rather hang on to that wild card. I think there's potentially going to be better opportunities to come.
So like Nick, I was definitely sympathetic to the wild card early strategy, at least. I'm not sure if I was ever fully on the game week two wildcard, but certainly a very early wildcard, I think, remains my strategy. Game week two just feels that a little bit early. Like, there are clear upsides, of course, and it is jumping on those United and City players when they're differentials, especially the United ones, as Nick says, given their fixtures. That's brilliant. Also, if there is some surprises in the game week one lineups, you can obviously adapt to that quite quickly, deal with price changes, you can react to somebody having a particularly good performance, whatever that may be. There's good opportunities there with that early wildcard. And of course, you just set yourself up well as well for game week two and beyond, and you can ignore game week one for whatever change that would bring to your squad. Just as you say, the issue is just that It's so early to do it. Okay, yes, there is the long-term wildcard better at the tail end of the first half of the season, and that's a proper strategic thing that we can go into or you can find outside of this parish. Okay, so that's one reason why you keep your wildcard. But the other is just the fact that, like, there's just so much uncertainty. I'd rather see how these squads bed in. The transfer window is still open, and there are so many teams who really need to sort out gaping holes around their team. Wolves is right back. There's Fulham have a gaping hole on one of their flanks as well. So they're right back as well, actually. There's some teams who really don't seem to have a recognised decent Premier League quality striker. There are huge transfers that need to be made, and I think there will be opportunities open up because of those. A lot of clubs as well tend to bed in players over the first few weeks of the season. Arsenal maybe will be one team who you might see that happen with. So with this in mind, just like, I'll just hang on just a little bit longer just to get more out of that wildcard when I do use it.
Yeah, it feels like you need a little bit more information to me, but I agree with that. And I think that the transfer window being open until quite late on, I mean, I'm not suggesting obviously that a player's going to come in and play straight away, but I mean, you've got big transfers that have just happened this week, like Havertz. Even this evening, there have been, James Rodriguez was announced this evening. You may have, you know, stuff like United finally landing Sancho, who knows? Like, all of these things may require a wild card to deal with.
Even something as, you know, seemingly trivial as the Bournemouth duo now landing at Newcastle.
Yeah,
Options, you know.
Absolutely. We've got a good question on them actually later on. And I also think, you know, game week two, game week three, wild carding around them. Okay, I understand it completely from a jumping on the value sort of thing, especially I think game week three as well, because you kind of have the tailwind of people who have saved the 2-3 transfers also then involved in the market. So then there's a lot more sort of liquidity at that time. But I do think there's definitely a bit of a deficit of information. Maybe it's, I've got memories last year of people jumping onto Triple United. They had Palace then as well. Yikes, that could be foreshadowing. But they lost, didn't they? Crystal Palace beat them at Old Trafford. I remember a cack in my pants because everybody had jumped on, you know, Triple United before that game. So, you know, there are always kind of elements where maybe there's not enough information quite yet to do it, even though if you're making money now, hopefully you'll be able to then express that value going forward in terms of giving you an advantage.
Yeah, and as well, I suppose maybe it's just worth pointing out that if you are using your wildcard as a money spinner, after the transfer window is open until just after game week four, there's an international break as well just around that point. So you're going to have a 2-week period where I think you will see more transfers than you might otherwise see, obviously, with it being a 2-week window instead of 1-week window. So if you are looking at that value aspect of using the wildcard, there probably seems to be a better scope there than there is now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's worth saying as well that I said earlier on that I'm looking to hold my wild card in the game week 16, but I'm not going to doggedly stick to that strategy. I'd rather get there 100k having used my wild card in game week 4 or 5 to rejig my squad and need to take some hits rather than getting there 1 million with wild card in hand and trying to make up. I'd much prefer to be in boat A than boat B. So that sounded like the first thing, Anthony, that you were even vaguely warm to, which is an early wildcard. But this doesn't sound like a strategy still. And I've seen, you know, I think the first three, big at the bench, this kind of prepping idea, and game week 1 free hit to wildcard, game week 2 YOLO. Like, those were the ones that I really felt were quite common on, you know, on the social channels and stuff. So I'm a bit bemused about where we are. I mean, Simon Ngora, chairman, said to us, you know, how are we cutting through the herd mentality on Twitter? It's getting to him a little bit in terms of the setups. And it sounds like you guys have managed to cut through it, because I think we've reached the last one, which is maximum flexibility / flexible working hours. I've described this as being have no plan, just play it. I love a bit of laissez-faire. But you're both nodding. Nick, what's going on? You're normally, you know, the arc planner, and here you are indulging in liberal behaviours. What's happening?
Beard getting to your head, Nick. It's the beard,
perhaps,
isn't it?
Perhaps. You know, I don't have a craft beer tonight, unfortunately. I normally do. Just the bearded hipster. Yeah, I think it's just for... I just like being a little bit flexible. I don't really have a plan in mind. My kind of plan, I guess, was to set up with a strong team that I would be happy with for the first 5 game weeks or so, and make transfers as and when. You know, if I'm going to say I had anything planned, I kind of was looking at Aubameyang and selling him in game week 3 for a Manchester United or a Manchester City midfielder. I would potentially look to bring in a Manchester United player for game week 2 as well, depending on who looked particularly crap in game week 1. So if it's a case that Vardy was dreadful and looks past it, then maybe I'd bring in Martial. I'm looking at it at the moment and saying, right, I really want a good team for game 1. I want a good team for the first 5 game weeks or so. but I will bring in some Manchester United and Manchester City players at some point, but I don't know when. It all depends on what happens. We've got a lot of stuff happening in the real world as well as on the pitch. It's frantic. The news is like, today's been ridiculous with the breaking news of Greenwood and Foden being kicked out of the England squad, Mbappe getting coronavirus about an hour before we went live, as I said, Laporte and Mahrez as well. It's wild right now. So could be the whole French team we were just debating before we went live could now have to quarantine. We haven't heard anything. Maybe you'll know by the time you actually hear this, but it just feels like it's so much going on that I just want as flexible approach as possible and just be kind of ready for whatever happens and react as and when they do.
We're just classic millennials, really. Just, you know, some millennials do yoga to be flexible. We're just flexible in our transfer strategies, you know. That's just how it is. The fact of the matter is, look, it's COVID, it's the discipline issues, it's the fact that, like, this international break as well. I've watched two Ireland games. I watched the England versus Iceland game. You could put that in the bracket of, yeah, I know. And I also watched a bit of the Germany-Switzerland game. Yeah. And all of them, you would say that there was a serious lack of intensity. There was a clear general match fitness issues throughout all of the teams that I was watching. I really think that we're going to see quite a lot of issues springing up in these first few weeks. And I really don't want to be tied to any strategy. As I said earlier, I've hedged across the big teams in terms of my premium players, just so that I can budge to a City or United player or one of their teammates of those elite players that I have. I just really don't want to tie myself to anything. Quite happy to just make it up as I go along for a few weeks. Use that wild card that I have there early if I feel like it. I think I'm more warm to it, and I think that I can, you know, overmanage my way through the late part of the first half of this season. So I'm not too concerned about using the wild card then, and I'd rather, you know, use it in game week four or whatever if that's what I feel is the best thing to do. But aside from that, I'm just, you know, happy with my game week one team. I'm happy with what that team would look like in game week two, and that's about it.
Okay. Now, it strikes me that from listening to you guys and speaking about it, there's kind of a spectrum. You guys with the maximum flexibility, no real plan. Probably me next with the, okay, I've got Martial on my bench, but I'm also planning to get to game week three, see what happens. Then you've probably got the kind of the preppers who are saying, right, I'm making moves one and two and three, whatever you may be doing, or, you know, whatever player you've got queued up to be gotten rid of. That's kind of, you know, three out of four on the scale of I've got a plan. And then all the way to basically full commitment. Game week one is a complete free hit. You've got Mane, you've got Salah, you've got free Chelsea, you know, you've got Vardy sat in your team, and it's all just a game week one free hit. And then you're kind of committed to game week two wildcard as soon as you're in. So it feels like there's a bit of a spectrum of kind of depth of planning, as it were. And we're all kind of down towards the lower end of getting just bumbling through to game week three, rather than sort of your Krellin or something who's really kind of already planned in his transfers all the way up to game week 16, no doubt. Very interesting. Just to remind you then that big at the bank, the four strategies kind of are that we think are around. I'm sure there may be some others. Big at the bench. So the idea that you're kind of benching a Martial, but benching United or indeed a City asset, something like that. Prepping or booking. So booking in a transfer. Game week one is a free hit. And game week two, wild card. And finally, what these guys are doing, maximum flexibility. Yeah. I think another thing just to mention quickly as well is kind of the key ways in which this is sort of enabled. Because, I mean, if you guys are just kind of going for the max flexibility, a lot of hubbub around this sort of idea of kind of price points occupancy, old price points, blah, 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 blah at the moment. I mean, is it something you guys have paid mind to? Or is it something that kind of just happens naturally? Like, I feel like I naturally do this anyway. So I wonder whether it is a thing with a capital T or just a thing that you do naturally when you're organically making your team. What do you guys think about this? Is it something you've consciously paid mind to when you're composing your teams?
I think it often happens quite naturally. I mean, I look at my team anyway and some of the players that might come in at game week two, and I've generally got positions in defence, midfield and forward that could be easily downgraded to other slots. I think if I look at my team, I think the only gap I seem to have in terms of a price point occupancy is sort of that 7 million, 8 million midfielder. I don't have any of those in my team currently. I've got two very expensive midfielders and then two slightly cheaper ones at 5.5 million. And perhaps that is a gap in my team, maybe. But I did look at the sort of the 7 millions, the 8 millions midfielders, and there's not really anyone that I was particularly sold on. I like Havertz at some point. I'd perhaps bring him in when he's settled at 8.5 million. But below that, I don't know. I mean, I had Mason Mount, as you know, in one of my drafts. he's made way for a sort of Alan Saint-Maximin character, which gave me 1.5 million extra to play with to, you know, improve my forward line. So, you know, I've got a little bit of a gap there, I guess, in my team, and perhaps I could get caught out later on by having that gap. But it isn't something I was overly concerned about when setting my team. I think when it comes to Game Week 2 and the players that I would bring in anyway for Game Week 2, it would be those Manchester United expensive assets would be the ones that I'd, you know, clearly drawn to, I'd imagine. And I wouldn't be able to sell a 7 or 8 million to get those guys in anyway. It'd have to be an Aubameyang or a Salah or a Vardy that goes to get one of those guys in. And it depends who looks the worst.
Looking at how I've put my squad together, I think it's definitely just FPL ting, man. It would be my response to your actual question, Tom. Like, the fact of the matter is that, like, you've got two elite midfielders in there. Then I've got one, you know, high elite in Son at 9 million, let's say. I've got Werner at that 9.5, and he can swap to pretty much any striker, given that they're not actually that expensive at the elite end of the spectrum. I do have a gap in that middle midfielders that Nick has as well. I don't have any gap, really, amongst my defenders, mostly because I've really invested heavily in fives and 5.5s. So it kind of means that they can pretty much change into anybody with 1/2 transfers. So with that in mind, like, okay, yeah, there is an element of not snookering myself with the price points within my team. I'm not going to have three, let's say, elite midfielders in there and then no money in my forwards. So, you know, it would be very hard, let's say, to get money into my forward line without two transfers, unless I had Werner in there and I really wanted to make some sort of move that would see him sacrificed. But other than that, like, nothing alarming, just a bit of balance.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. Probably a good place to end as well for this particular section. I think just the word on it is that if you're an engaged manager, I think you kind of aren't going to be making the glaring errors that you see kind of newer people make. So stuff like, you know, having five blankers or selecting non-FPL relevant players from the club they support, you know, like having a Højbjerg in there or something like that. I mean, at this point, and as I said through the discussions, like, I think all those strategies are valid and defensible. And I think there's a lot of player choices which are also valid and defensible. Like, every single player at the moment has a yeah, but this about them. There's a whataboutery sort of thing that's going to go on a lot this week. But ultimately, you just do whatever's right for you. Like, it's game week one and there's past season data, there's new signing scout reports, everything like that that could possibly kind of be there to change your mind. But at the same time, you know, it's ultimately about who you think is decent here. I mean, some people will relook at ownership, for example, as a way to dictate their game week one drafts. I don't know. I think over the time I've just learned to just have fun, basically. And it sounds like all three of us have just made squads of players who we just kind of think are the best picks rather than looking at any kind of external factors like that. So there you go. Right, we'll take a break there and we'll move on to the correspondence section, the new nascent correspondence section. No, not correspondence as in people who represent the teams, correspondence with an NCE. Back after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and normally this section would start with Anthony giving a league update, but obviously not this week. Next week we'll be back in, providing the game week one and detailing whichever crazy team has found its way to the summit of the Who Got This Mini League. As Nick mentioned at the start of the pod, the league code is CPSULF. Before we go on to the Q&A, first we've got the correspondence section, and we've got Anthony, whose idea this was, to introduce.
Oh, wow. My name has been associated with this segment. Wow. It's like this is a referendum on me now.
Hello, boss.
Thanks, Tom. It's like, wow. Yeah, so look, usually we'd have a listener contribution in the form of rapid fire questions and answers, and we will have that. And that's always been part of the running order of the pod. But we'd also like to hear your comments, your clarifications, your addendums to our previous podcast discussions or wider FPL questions. So do please get in touch to whogottheassist@gmail.com with whatever is on your mind. The inaugural correspondence letter comes from our friend of the show and a man with a moniker which I think is up there with the best in the FPL community, Desperately Seeking Dusan, who you'll find on Twitter at Seeking Dusan, no spaces or underscores in there. Now, Alan, as he is also known, writes, "Dear WTTA team, Captain Obvious was overwhelmingly chosen as preferred strategy in the last podcast. But isn't the obvious captain an ex-ante concept seen through the spectacles of hindsight? For example, in Game Week 31 Plus last season, the majority of the game opted for Mo Salah at home to Crystal Palace as the obvious captain, which was evidently a sensible choice given that he was the player that he is and the fixture that was there. And of course, Salah did score and he did assist and got 11 points. But however, to a richly deserved post-result fanfare late riser, captained Anthony Martial for a hat-trick at home to Sheffield United. Prior to kickoff, a large proportion of the community were surprised at late riser's pick. And although it is tempting to suggest that there's like an outcome bias in this example, the facts were that Sheffield United were away from home to a resurgent Bruno-inspired Manchester United, who had everything to play for. Whilst the Blades were without two key defenders in Egan and O'Connell, and most crucially, had no Dean Henderson, who was ineligible to play against his parent club. Prior to that game, Henderson had a season XG prevented of plus 8.7, making him the real strength behind the Sheffield United defence and prior clean sheets. Alan rounds off his email with a question. If you always pick the captain obvious, will you not simply achieve captaincy scores that are similar to the average score of engaged players, the ones who were, that we're competing with? Kind regards, desperately seeking an answer.
Yes, I wasn't on the pod last week when you talked about captain obvious, so perhaps I'll give my 10 cents here. I think I don't understand where he's coming from, and you know, the example is a very interesting one of a sort of a pick that perhaps wasn't the obvious pick at the time, but when you look back, you know, you weigh up the circumstances around it, you know it made sense, and Nate Ryder was very clever in terms of that particular selection. I think I still personally, for me, I feel like I agree with the guys when they were on the pod last week in terms of, you know, the rule that was the unwritten rule that we talked about. The obvious captain is obvious. I know it's saying, oh, you're following the norm in that week. But if you follow that strategy 38 weeks over the season, it will end up with you trending to a high score as opposed to a template score. I think, you know, that was an example of where it had worked, where the obvious pick, a differing pick to the obvious pick worked. But, you know, you tend to only hear the stories of success most of the time for, you know, on Twitter, someone picks someone that's a differential captain and it pays off and you get all the news and all the fanfare, but you don't hear about all the times it doesn't pay off when people don't pick Salah and go for risky picks, for instance. And I kind of remember an example from last season where I went against an obvious captain pick, and the example perhaps was Callum Wilson, which a lot of people captained him in that week where they played Norwich, and actually a lot of people captained Teemu Pukki in that game as well. Both were like really popular picks, but they weren't obvious picks, they were kind of differential picks. And of course that game ended 0-0, both players blanked, and that kind of set the trend for those players and as FPL assets really for the end of the whole of the season. And you know, the obvious pick perhaps would have been Jamie Vardy in that week, Burnley at home, who scored. And you know, rather than going for someone a bit more of a risky pick like Callum Wilson or Teemu Pukki and it kind of blowing up in your face. So I think I am still, despite you know, Alan's point of view, I think, and what you raised some very good points there, I'm still perhaps in favour of the obvious pick is obvious for the captain obvious.
Yeah, no, I'm broadly the same. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it depends on the nature of the advice you're trying to give. Are you trying to advise people on how to win FPL, or are you trying to advise people on how to get a good rank, I suppose, overall? I mean, if you're trying to win FPL, yeah, you know, go mental. Just try to get these sort of high-risk, high-reward sorts of picks off week after week. We've seen numerous examples of players winning the whole damn thing who, in the past, haven't really gotten anywhere because they just... the variance has gone their way, effectively, at the risk of using the L word. Even late riser himself, I mean, yeah, we looked at the example that Alan mentioned with Martial. Obviously, there's a very high profile, you know, fantastic moment of somebody going against the grain, going with their own decision making, and that paying off. But even late riser himself says that in his upside chasing, he's picking his moments. He's not just going for it willy-nilly week to week, but he does like these sort of high variance, high risk, high reward moves. In terms of kind of the general mainstream thing, right, I guess others going off piste in a captaincy week where there is a captain obvious are the people who you are trying to profit from, right? People not going with the obvious captain, the people that you're trying to step over effectively to get a higher rank. And as I said last week, if you zoom out and think about it over the long term, if captain obvious is obvious because they come off, say, half the time throughout the course of the season, don't you think that you're going to more often than not have a net higher score than other people who have gone somewhere else with their captain? So do you not think you're going to have a net higher amount of good outcome game weeks than other people do? We know how important the captaincy can be. It can be so often the difference in a good and bad week. And as we spoke about on pods ad nauseam, getting their captain pick wrong is such a killer. And a lot of the time, a lot of people who are very good at FPL also happen to have a similarly very good talent, which is being very good at picking up the captains. And a lot of the time that is captain obvious. So there's something like recognizing Martial in the context of Henderson being out. That's something different altogether. But I think in this regard, it's just about kind of thinking, right, okay, is it all about good rank? Is it all about kind of thinking, all right, how are you going to just improve your performance a little bit? In this regard, with captain obvious, it's more about reeling us in rather than providing something that's kind of genuinely around an intricate novo strategy du jour. I think it's more about kind of just trying to check where we are and balance sort of our behaviors a little bit towards kind of thinking, right, you can really be into it, be really engaged, but you can still make mistakes. So it's just providing advice to help you in that regard.
I've already voiced my thoughts last week, and I think I just fully agree. It's just like, you just need to try and stay patient and stick to the captain obvious, and long term it's going to do better for you. And I think whilst we can always point to those examples, as you know, as Nick said, that, you know, we'll go up in lights on Twitter and we'll be talked about for ages, like late risers picked last season. The fact of the matter is that those come around once in a blue moon, and taking risks, as I did, let's say, last season and the tail end of the season, probably didn't do me any good as it turned out. Anyway, thank you very much to Alan for sending in that particular email. Any thoughts, comments, clarifications, addendums you want to add to this pod or others, just get it into whogottheassist@gmail.com, all one word.
Yep, and we will definitely hopefully have a more kind of, as the season wears on and we've got kind of a greater body of work behind us throughout the course of the season, have a lot more to call on in terms of providing complex answers. But that was hopefully a good example for people who weren't quite sure what we meant by that when we put it on Twitter or spoke about it earlier on about how we intend this to work. To the more orthodox quickfire Q&As. But yeah, it's the 4.5 million rotations, the first question we've received. First question of the season, Seven Wonders FPL. He asks, what 4.5 millions we're looking at in defence? And if we've got any rotations on the go, or any we're interested in taking up? Stag, you said earlier on that you've never been able to keep up a game week one plan post game week three. Any 4.5 rotations that you're eyeing up?
Nah, I've eliminated that. I remember for years I used to be sitting there on Twitter trying to work out these, you know, great rotating pairs or rotating trios and putting it out on Twitter and thinking I was great, and then I'd have ditched it so quickly because, you know, inevitably if you've got a 4.5 defender, usually they're in a bad team and at least one of two or one of three turns out to be absolutely cack and you'd end up needing to change things up. And when we had the initial price reaction pod, there were so many 4.5 defenders. I remember I thought we were drowning in riches.
I want them all.
Yeah, we have so much money. We can put it all into midfield. We don't want, and I hate them all now. Like, I just have Kyle Walker-Peters in my team. And I don't even want him, to be honest. Like, at least he's nailed. And like, Southampton got 3 clean sheets and 9 in Project Restart. They conceded 8 goals, but that was an overperformance in XG terms of about 3.5 goals. They probably should have conceded 11 or 12. Like, they have a few good fixtures at the start, i.e. Crystal Palace, basically, who I don't think can attack, and West Brom in game week 4, who basically have one attacker in their whole entire squad that's at Premier League quality. But like, Walker-Peters himself, like, there's no real attacking output there. 3 chances created and 2 shots from game week 32 onwards when he was first choice. So we're not talking about some sort of like underhanded or unknown Marcus Alonso sitting there at Southampton. So like, Ruben Vinagre looked like a great pick, and it looks like he's heading away. Martial, actually, the Martial, not to be confused with the Martial plan, but definitely about as expensive as something the Americans were investing in at 5.0. Like, the fact of the matter is, I've never seen fans so excited to lose a player as Lyon fans were on Our Soccer the other night when that transfer was confirmed. They were genuinely delirious. One commenter suggested that, you know, his passion and his errors are so fundamental to his game, it's going to cost Wolves so many goals. And another popular comment was saying he had more red cards, 3, and own goals, 2, than good games for Lyon last season. I've pulled out the numbers myself. So the 3, the 2, and he was 26 caps, like, or 26 appearances all season. Like, you're not that good. And he's meant to be playing left back, according to Tim Spears, who's the Athletic correspondent for Wolves. But like, he has been playing at left centre back for this Lyon team. He's not meant to be good at left back at all. Worse than he was already at left centre back. Like, I don't know what's going on at Wolves. So yeah. That's my 4.5s rant.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. I'm the same as you, that over the years, I mean, remember one of the first tweets that I did that got over 20 likes was a rotation between 3 teams on Twitter. That was when the account had about 20 followers, I think it was. And I was like, oh, Nick, no, you've got 20 likes. And you were just like, yeah, well done, mate, well done. But I think the reality is now we're so far along, it definitely feels like busy work to me. I'm not knocking the likes of FPL Swede or Lego Mane Dan, who spent ages doing this. And that's great. There's a lot of people who do love that. Just not for me. And I agree with Anthony completely. It just doesn't last very long. In terms of the 4.5s and how I'm approaching it, it's really attuned to the COVID context. It's a 4.5 million phalanx alongside TAA of players who are just going to play, frankly. I mean, they do have some sort of vague rotation in that for the first three game weeks. You know, I've got Carl Walker-Peters as well. And then he comes off in game week two and Ezri Konsa comes on to play, right? Ezri Konsa is a player who's just going to play, and Aston Villa looked very defensively good at the end of last season, so he's just there for that reason. But really, they are 90-minute men. That's the key thing. If Adam Webster had good fixtures, I'd have him in at 4.5, but he doesn't, so I've got Konsa in at the moment. I did have Vinagre, I've now got Sice, I've got KWP, I've got James Justin, and it's none of them are particularly exciting. They're just there to kind of be a body and to enable the rest of my team effectively whilst providing me 90 minutes and providing me some form of upside. So Konsa had a decent goal threat about him from those Grealish deliveries. Sice obviously plays for a team, he's 5.0, but plays for a team which is quite defensively solid, although who knows with all of these players coming in and Christ knows with Martial hanging around. And KWP, defensive fullback, as we mentioned on the pod a few weeks ago. I mean, he does play for Southampton, who've got a decent start. That's basically it. I'm not particularly excited about these 4.5s anymore. I've completely lost the excitement. Don't believe in any rotation, but I think if I was to rank them, I know it's not the question 7-1 disaster, I'm going to do it anyway. Probably looking at James Justin first, Walker Peters second, Charlie Taylor or Peters, whoever comes out as being the Burnley guy third. That's probably about it, isn't it? It's not particularly exciting anymore. If they're good fixtures, brilliant. I'd be all over them. But as it stands, I'm just not excited at all. So they're just there because there are bodies on the field. Nick, what do you reckon?
We're depressed as well about the 4.5 million defenders. The excitement that we had when they first emerged, like Vinagre, he's still in my team at the moment, but it does look like he might move to Porto away or something like that. He's one to keep an eye on, certainly over the next few days. I've got Justin in there at the moment as well, like you, Tom. But, you know, I know they've signed Castagne, which might have an impact on his minutes potentially. I don't know. The Burnley defenders, I do like the Burnley defenders. I might end up with Charlie Taylor or someone in there. Obviously, they've got a blank game week one, so it's not necessarily going to work. And then with Walker Peters, I just wasn't sure about the double up in defence with McCarthy. Doesn't really work for me. I think Lamptey as well is another one we mentioned. Potentially rotating with Veltman. Who knows? Bit of a risk. And finally, the Leeds defenders. No one's mentioned the Leeds defenders. I think they could be some decent picks. I know there's been about 100 Dallas versus Ireland threads on Twitter, so check those out if you're keen on them.
But, no, honestly, those threads, you know, I still can't figure out heads nor tail of why people are going for Ailing over Dallas and some of them. Like, the fact of the matter is that, like, okay, they're like, oh, Dallas, there's actually other players that could play in his position. Dallas plays everywhere, man.
Yeah,
he was first choice as well last season.
Be a favourite, right? I've got, full disclosure, I've got Meslier from Leeds in goal, and that kind of sorts that out to some extent. I want a little bit of that defence.
I've done the same thing. I have Ilan Melier, as he is,
Melier, is it? Okay.
Yeah, Ilan Melier.
I couldn't tell whether his name was like Eastern European or French.
Yeah, no, I actually went looking earlier to get it right. I also have Marek Rodak actually in there, but a good 4.5.
Hang on. We need to discuss this. You're rolling a Fulham defender, despite everything that we've said, rubbishing them.
I didn't rubbish their defence once.
You're not tempted by the Johnston Button double up there?
No. I think the fact of the matter is that Fulham team, Hector could be a pretty good pick as a 4.5 defender. He'll hoover up bonus points. Like, he could pretty much does all of the CBIs that defence does. They have clean sheetable early fixtures for sure. And then, like, look, like, there's Leeds in there, there's Villa in there, there's Crystal Palace in there, all in the first six. Eminently doable games, but I've just gone for Rodak purely because save points, and Fulham gave up an awful lot of shots last year. Rodak had like 2.8 or 2.9 shots per game last season in the Championship. That's going to tick over three. That's a point. Thank you very much. Tom's looking fearful.
Interesting that a team facing lots of shots is a positive. It definitely is. I guess it's counterintuitive, isn't it? That because they're taking a lot of shots, you don't want to play a goalkeeper who's not going to be taking many shots on. But if they do concede, that's it. Like an Edison sort of type. So, you know, getting those 3 points. I mean, at one point last year, I think Tim Krul, by dint of a penalty save, was second for goalkeepers. So definitely, you know, something in going for a Johnson, something like that. Melier, because he's sort of in the middle between.
Yeah, it's just knowing that I'm going to wildcard probably within 5 or 6 weeks. It's like, do you know what? Rodak has a few decent fixtures in there. Throw him in, see how it turns out. If he saves a penalty, fantastic. And otherwise, Shalok, like, we learned something along the way that Fulham conceding loads of shots means they also concede loads of goals. And if that's what we learn, fair enough.
To be fair, we also saw it with Neil Everidge, if you remember as well. He saved a couple of early penalties and was smashing it in terms of the underlying stats. It's very often that, you know, some of these cheaper goalkeepers are actually the ones that do the best over the course of the season just because they're having all the shots. But they have to be a good goalkeeper. And that, I think the whole you back in the Fulham defence, though, reminds you of sort of when you always kind of like fall in love a little bit with the players you're writing about for an article. Uh-huh. Like when I did a prospect in the prospects for Vicente Iborra, that Tom will remember, I was sold on this guy. I thought he was going to be a fantastic
I had but I had a similar thing with Trossard. Season. I had a thing with Trossard as well. I was like, this guy he's amazing. No. Like, of course, yeah, underlying stats dream, but reality, a bit more annoying.
I mean, I we should probably move on to the next question, but I really want to know about the rotating keepers. It's never been something that I've been behind, and the FPL Rodney asked about this as well in terms of rotating keepers when I put the beer photo out. So it's just come to mind a little bit. But I mean, you've got Melier, you've got Rodak in a rotation by the sounds of it. Like, why are you going for that? Why? What the hell has possessed you?
It's a crap game. It's a crap game week one for both of them. If you're looking at the rotating pair and you're like,
absolutely,
oh, this is terrible.
Absolutely.
But, you know, all those shots that Aubameyang is going to be taking from outside the box, they're going to be great for Rodak. And then after that, Fulham's game week two fixture, that's actually quite good. It's against Leeds, which is obviously also good for the other side of that.
Yeah.
Rodak then has Villa, and then I'm probably going to be wildcarding. And if I don't, I quickly scramble to check who Millier plays in game week four. Forget that. It's Manchester City.
It's Man City, yeah.
I'm playing Rodak there.
But
great
that's
game
why
against
I've got
Wolves.
Him in. That's why I've got him in, because if Melier, like, okay, he plays like two of the top two in the first 4 weeks, and then we're done for a while.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. This is the thing with him, at least. And Rodak just has pretty decent fixtures pretty much straight through. You know, like, they're not terrible fixtures, let's say, all the way straight through. It's just how much you believe they're going to struggle. But I didn't really want Alex McCarthy and Kyle Walker-Peters. Brighton's fixtures are bad. So I was like, yeah, might as well try something else, you know?
Okay. When you wildcard, though, I mean, in the COVID context, just to segue and link to the next question as well, in the COVID context, is there an argument to have two rotating goalkeepers or at least two playing keepers? Is that a thing too for you guys? It kind of isn't for me, but I'm worried that I'm being complacent.
Two playing keepers and two keepers who aren't playing in a game against each other, if you really want to double down on it as well, because if a squad goes into isolation, then that's a whole game called off potentially. If you really want to get, you know, freaking out about it with your rotating pairs and non-clashing fixtures as well. I like to always have two playing goalkeepers anyway, because it just means that I don't have an immediate problem if one player gets suspended or injured or whatever, as we saw can happen with, say, Leno last season. I think I actually ended up getting caught by that because I played myself with wild cards and stuff. So yeah, no, two playing goalkeepers for sure. Nick?
I'm not huge on the two playing goalkeepers. I think it's like a little bit of a waste of 0.5 million. I know it's not a lot of your budget, but I just think 4.5 million, 4 million combination works best. And I know you can sometimes find the sort of the setups in one team if you want to ensure yourself a little bit with the substitute goalkeeper on the same side. I have done a little bit of rotating goalkeepers in the past when I did have 4 million goalkeepers that were actually playing, like with Rob Elliott and I think it was Jakubovic or Pickford or someone when he was 4 million.
Okay, Jakubovic and Pickford, that what a rotation that was. Holland Sunderland, yeah. Wow. What?
I just remember, though, that like, it always seemed to be the case that I'd benched the wrong keeper anyway. It's great, rotating keepers is a fantastic concept, but you have to get the right, you have to play the right one. And I never seem to. It's, you always get like a, if you, I think, I can't remember, rotated Foster with someone at one point and he had like 11 points on the bench. I've got vague memories of that. Just, it seems to always not work out. So yeah, I'm not huge on rotating goalkeepers. So moving on to the next question, related to COVID insurance. So FPL Meta asked us to discuss the opportunity cost of making your team more COVID safe by investing more on the bench. Dabby Pierce also asked, how the current context has impacted our approach in that regard, and as do Ian Mayo and FPL Claret. So lots of questions on COVID from our listeners here. And I think for me, I'm not really overly concerned about having a heavy bench, you know, loading up on too many bench players and spending lots of money on the bench in the case that a game's called off, a player's called off. I know it's a worry, but we didn't end up actually having any games called off in the 30 to 38 period. So hopefully, you know, we don't see that happening. But I think in terms of insurance, I'm probably just going to be a case that I'm delaying my transfers as much as possible. We talked about, and you guys talked about it on the last pod, the Austin rule a little bit, in terms of avoiding those early transfers and when they're midweek fixtures due to risk of injury. But I think for me, because of COVID, it's almost like just leave it until the last minute possible. And I think you discussed this as well. Just leave it to the last minute possible, because, you know, there could be a news. We've seen breaking news every day, as we talked about earlier. You know, so I don't want to bring in a player earlier and then find he's out for Corona, because that's just a waste of a transfer, isn't it? So I'm just going to, my insurance is just to leave my transfers late. But I'm not too worried about having a heavy bench because I want to spend that money on the starting 11.
Yeah, look, one thing I will consider with my COVID insurance, as we'll call it, is I don't think I will have my captain and vice captain playing in the same game. I know it's something that would rarely occur unless you were capping two players from the same team, let's say De Bruyne and Sterling. I'm going to avoid having that happen. But look, having a bench on top of that, I'm just saying look all of a sudden constantly, and I'm so conscious of it. But yes, having a bench is definitely something, as I said earlier in the pod, that I want to have. Just even just to have your fodder Harrison Reed-esque type player in there. And like, look, teams like Spurs are going to be playing 8 games in 18 days, including a 3,000-mile return trip in the next few weeks. Like, the fact of the matter is that there are so many factors that are meaning that there's just going to be injuries, rotation, etc., that just having a deep bench will be helpful, even without the pandemic middling along in the background. And storms also occur. You might remember last season we had a game cancelled because of a storm, too.
It was Man City Arsenal, wasn't it?
That's it. Yeah, that sounds right to me. Yeah, and that caused...
I thought that was a carnage. COVID cancellation, wasn't it?
No, it was initially a storm and then became COVID. Because I had my captain and vice captain in that very same game.
Oh, here we go.
So I agree with that completely. I echo those points fantastically. I like what you said earlier as well. I hadn't fully appreciated it, but I like what you said earlier, Anthony, about not having players who play each other as much as I possibly can. Maybe that's something that I'll have a look at tomorrow in terms of my draft. But I'm in terms of answering the question, especially the one about opportunity cost, one thing that I have done this year is I don't have any 4.0 defenders, because I, at the time of recording, don't think that any of them are solid starters or starters I'm going to believe are going to be starting. Earlier on, I said that I've got 4.5 million defenders who I'm fairly sure are going to start if I've got them. That's basically the only parameter. And if they've got decent fixtures, then great. And I've not got any cheap strikers. I've got Harrison Reed, who's only 4.5, who I think is currently nailed on to play, who's a CDM two-pointer sort of guy. And I've got three, basically, players on the bench. I don't have a playing goalkeeper. Maybe I need to think about that. But the ceiling solo of keeper, I don't particularly care.
The nice thing about Reed as well, compared to a lot of other defensive midfielder options, this is like, you know, it's the most boring nitty gritty thing FPL to be talking about. 4.5 million midfielders, the 15th person in your squad. Reed doesn't pick up that many yellow cards as well, which is kind of helpful. It's not, at least it's a 2-pointer, not a 1-pointer more often than not if he does play.
Yeah, he's going to be buried third bench most of the season. And ideally, that would be a 4.0 defender. But I think given how things are at the moment, I think it would just be very useful to have a Konsa or a Webster or something like that who comes off the bench. I mean, I did that in the past with having Duffy as my first sub, and that was okay. Like, just a player that you know is always going to be there. Absolutely fine. Obviously, the opportunity cost of that is that if I had, you know, if it was a normal season, no COVID, and, you know, I'd definitely more be looking at having Bruno as being my bencher and having, you know, cheap players in a few places to enable that and make that sort of work. As it stands, you know, I've got St. Max and I've got 4.5s I could easily take them down to 5.0s. If Suchet was fine, obviously, but I could take them all down to 5.0s and the defenders down to 4.0s to make it work with Bruno. But I don't feel like that's going to be what I want to be doing this year because of how things are. So I'm still trying to kind of balance it with COVID in mind, or at least the worst case scenario in mind. But a lot of the time it's going to be very, very difficult to countenance, isn't it? One of those things that it's going to be the new normal, I think. We're going to just see players ruled out. We're going to see teams with COVID scares. And as Nick said, I think you're just going to have to be holding those transfers, as we said last week, and probably in Sam. Right, next question. Formation stations. FPL King Paddy asks us what formations we think are going to be seen the most from the start. So we said on the very first pod, the pricing pod, we turned around and said, the strikers, those guys, who cares about them? It's all diamond field. It's all 3-5-2 all the way. Now, I don't think that's the case anymore, is it? Anthony, are you a 3-5-2 man still, or is it all about them strikers for you?
I've gone backwards again. I'm flip-flopping like mad on who I think is, you know, which price point, which positions I think are particularly good. Now I think the strikers are bad again. I've gone back about 2 or 3 weeks into the past, and I've got Werner, reluctantly Mitrovic, and Michael Obafemi as my three forwards right now. That definitely won't be that by, you know, Saturday, but that's where we are right now, because I just basically don't believe in any striker under 6.0, and I'm not that keen on, you know, stretching to the likes of Ings, who are further up, and I've instead got a pretty strong defence across the board rather than dealing with those shudderful 4.5 defenders that I just really don't want in my team. And so, like, to answer Paddy's question, like, I actually don't have a clue, Paddy. Like, it seems so all over the place, more than usual. Like, there is a template there, but it's a template spine with kind of very random bits onto the side of it. Sometimes it's your Ings people, sometimes it's other midfielders. Your Son, for example, is the one that's in my team. It's I really don't know what the default formation is going to be. It's not standard, you know. 3-4-3 a few years ago was huge. 3-5-2 seemed obvious. It's not now. Maybe you guys are seeing this more clearly than I am, but to me it seems like formations are really all over the place to start.
So currently I'm actually on the classic formation, so to speak, the 3-4-3. It's like the 4-4-2 of the FPL world, isn't it? You know, just as much forward as you can. But I still back the 3-5-2 over the course of the season. I think, you know, the only reason it kind of died a death from our initial pod is because the Man United and the Man City blanks. But when you've got, you know, the likes of Greenwood, Aubameyang and Rashford now being midfielders, you've got Havertz, Ziyech and Pulisic from Chelsea. It's all, you've got so many options there as well. And you've got the City guys as well, De Bruyne, Sterling, etc. And Bruno as well from United. I just feel that's going to be where the money's sitting. That's going to be the key part of your team. And you're potentially going to have cheaper forward lines, you know, the likes of Brewster if he gets his move, the likes of Shea Adams, the likes of Mitrovic, sort of filling those cheaper holes up front. And yeah, I think it's going to be the 3-5-2 is going to be in vogue over the course of the season. I think the only reason it's perhaps not in vogue right now is just because of United and City not playing yet. And, you know, players like Havertz, Pulisic, you know, Pulisic is injured, Havertz is only just joined, but I think they're going to be quite key to our teams later on in the season.
Yep, I agree. I'm actually in 4-4-2 at the moment, but I will be moving to a 3-4-3 because of my big at the bench thing on game week 2. And I think that the strikers definitely at the moment are looking quite interesting. I think there are quite a few talismen in the ranks. I know it comes out of nowhere for you, Anthony. But I mean, you've got the likes of obviously Danny Ings. You've got Anthony Martial at 9.0, who looks like a nice foil if you're going for Aubameyang, going for Salah, or in the future indeed going for KDB and Liverpool player. You probably won't be able to afford to have a Bruno, so I don't know, it's quite a nice default, isn't it? It does feel like, as Nick said, very retro, very classic to go for the 3-4-3. But I mean, you know, you've got the likes of Vardy, as Nick mentioned before, you've got the likes of Werner, you've got even Jimenez, the forgotten man, it feels like, in the engaged community. Lots of really interesting options actually there, but I think a lot of it is due to the fact that we don't have that game week one. I think that if there were the KDB on the table, the Sterling on the table, things would be very, very different. We wouldn't be looking at the forwards. So we'd be looking at two forwards probably and trying to push as much as we can to that midfield. It's just the case of how things are right now. I've got a 3-4-3, but I will probably be looking to change things probably over time. It's one of the things you have to see how it goes. And you've got to play what's in front of you. at the moment, having three strikers seems to be a good way to sort of play the situation as it is. So, penultimate question, getting the band back together. So this is obviously a reaction to today's Newcastle news, Mike Ashley pulling things out of his very large behind. And last year's Min League winner, Jake Gallagher, at Match of the Dave, asks what impact Fraser and Wilson moving to Newcastle may have on them, and ASM, Alan Sam Maximin in particular. So Wilson and Fraser, a couple of years ago, they had more combined goal contributions than Messi and Suarez. They had one particularly ridiculous season 2 years ago, didn't they? And then both going there obviously fulfills the sort of what Bruce appears to be looking for in the place of having depressed transfer budget, getting proven players. And having Wilson there obviously meant that Fraser was more likely to say yes, and vice versa, because they obviously had a very, very good connection. But ASM obviously last year was serving dinner to people who couldn't eat it, in the likes of Joe Linton, Andy Carroll, etc., etc. Andy Carroll's been scoring in pre-season. But I guess what impact do we see Newcastle having as a result of guys coming in? I mean, their start to the season actually isn't that bad at all, is it? As far as mid-table teams go. West Ham, Brighton, Spurs, Burnley and Man United, the first five. Those first two in particular looking very Arsenal-like in that they're decent enough, at least, to get you through to that kind of game week three. I'll wait and see if you're going for that sort of category. So what do you guys reckon, Fraser, Wilson, Newcastle?
It's interesting. Seems to be a little bit of hype developing over Fraser, Wilson. You know, everyone's got these memories of 2 years ago and how they combined so well and got all these goals and assists. So people have kind of forgotten last season and just generally how bad they were. And how bad Bournemouth were. And I don't quite know what happened to Ryan Fraser at Bournemouth, where he had a falling out with someone or something, because the season kind of just ended. And with Callum Wilson, he had a strong start, but his stats last season weren't particularly good at all. You know, if I look at sort of the shots he had, it was less than the likes of Allaire, less than the likes of Jordan Ayew. You know, likes Jordan Ayew, for instance, scored more goals in the end than Callum Wilson over the course of the season. And, you know, just generally has better stats and was 1.5 million cheaper. We haven't got Wilson's price right now, but, you know, I think perhaps there's a little bit of excitement over those guys. And I don't necessarily think that they're going to be as good as a lot of people are expecting. You know, Newcastle are being praised for doing some astute business in the transfer window over the past few days, but they're essentially just buying players from teams that got relegated, which isn't necessarily great. That being said, I've still got Alan Saint-Maximin in my team. I'd like to think it would be a positive that he's got Callum Wilson. He's better forward than Joe Linton, so hopefully that increases his chances of getting a sit, creating space there for Alan Saint-Maximin to get into the box. And Ryan Fraser, as you said, he was absent last year, but that season he did well. He was sort of like second for assists across all midfielders, wasn't he? So, you know, I think hopefully for Alan Saint-Maximin, it's a positive that these guys come in, but I'm not necessarily going to be rushing to say, everyone get your Newcastle assets in straight away.
Yeah, little dad. Good first two fixtures. They are better players than Newcastle previously had. That should benefit Saint-Maximin in some way. But at the same time, what happened last season? Like, monumentally poor from both of them. And that does make me hesitant to bring them into my team for game week one. Could be one of these like classic reactionary things. You know, sometimes players just have bad seasons and they come back stronger. Sometimes they don't. I'm not, you know, completely optimistic about them. I think I would go for the known quantity in Saint-Maximin and gamble that he has, you know, slightly better players around him, and that might benefit him more than I would go on the new players themselves in Wilson or Fraser.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. I think the price of Saint-Maximin as well is just so, it lends itself to taking that punt. I mean, in the restart, it wasn't amazing. One goal, three assists. Of course, those three assists all came in the same game. 8 of the 9 games, he did absolutely squat for assist-wise, and he scored in one of them. Brilliant. In terms of shots in the box, 3 big chances, 2 shots on target, 7. I mean, none of these are particularly stats that are exciting me. I do own him because it's not too terrible. I mean, the XG is 1.75, the XA is 1.75. I can read off these stats, they're not particularly useful, are they? But again, I think we're hoping there's a sense of elevation, I suppose, from these new players coming in for him to have better better people to play with, effectively. That could definitely be a thing. One word as well, Miguel Amaron, he has been overlooked because he's 0.5 more expensive than Saint-Maximin, but it's worth noting that he has a lot more shots in the box than Mr. Saint-Maximin does, creates more chances than Saint-Maximin does. He was playing on the wing because of how things tend to be, but he does tend to be more of a number 10. So maybe the new signing of Fraser will have an impact on him and move him back into that sort of creator role that he craves, or maybe a kind of a creation slash breaking into the box sort of role. So maybe we may see the Paraguayan, who looks like he's just had a slushy on the way home from training, do very, very well. But yeah, I think known quantity of Saint-Maximin, fair enough. But yeah, Almiron is there if you do want a differential. I think he's only owned by less than 2% at the moment. So one to bear in mind. And the final question of this preseason is sickening additions. The equally sickening Adam Pritchard asks, who do we feel physically unwell about having in our drafts? And are there any indeed that we just can't include because of prior biases? Are there any players that you've kind of played with, tried to put in, or any players that indeed are in there at the moment that are playing a role? We both know why we're there, but we're not particularly excited. An FPL buddy, as it were. Sub out FPL for another word, if you'd like. What do you guys reckon? Any players that make you feel physically ill?
Well, apart from Jamie Vardy, I've also got Alexander Mitrovic and another lovely lad fronting my team right now. And he is a player, when I look at my current draft, I think, what the hell are you doing here? Why have I got Mitrovic in my team, especially because I think I owned him 2 years ago and he was rubbish for me. But I just remember that season, it was a bit of a rough time. But I'm when I get Mitrovic in, I've owned Mitrovic, I'm trying to put away my personal biases. I'm trying to ignore my personal biases, my personal experiences, and look at it, you know, purely from a statistical point of view, or the eye test. And I think at 6 million, he's 0.5 million than he was that other campaign with Fulham. So he's cheaper. He's also a better player than he was back then. So last season, he actually scored 26 goals in the Championship, which was the top scorer, and his best ever career performance for goals. So he's hitting this campaign in his best ever form. Fulham as well, I really like their fixtures. They've got Arsenal in game week one, but game week 2-9, they don't play any of the top six. So it seems like a really good time to kind of jump on one of their players for those fixtures. Maybe that's why Stack has Rodak, I don't know. Otherwise, I also looked at his record for Serbia, and I was really impressed by that as well. He's had 35 goals in 57 games for Serbia in international football, and 24 goals in their last 24 games, which is over the course of the last few years. But that record just really, really impressed me. And I think, you know, 6 million, he just seemed like a really good player just to fit in, regardless of my sort of my personal feelings on the player. And so he's the one that I look at and feel physically unwell, basically.
Yeah, an international goal as well in just the recent break for Mitrovic in a 3-1 defeat to Russia. So yeah, he's still hitting that form this particular season. I can't believe that there are hundreds of players in FPL, and I'm also saying Mitrovic here. He's also in my squad. I just don't like having him in there. He's a volume striker, and that is his definition. Like, he had a goal conversion of about a shot conversion of about 17% last term in the Championship. In the Premier League the year before that, when he was with Fulham, it was 8.4%, which is very poor. Gabriel Jesus, 13.9%. You all get extremely frustrated with Jesus. Keep that in mind. Like, if he falls in the middle of those two numbers, you're saying, okay, you're allowing for the Championship defences being obviously a little bit worse and him getting more time, so he's converting a little bit more, then you're saying he'd have about a Gabriel Jesus level of goal conversion. The problem is that he's not getting chances created for him like Gabriel Jesus is. And this Fulham team, in fact, don't actually even create that many chances. They were 11th for shots in the box in the Championship last season. They're a very slow, methodical, possession-based team who can't counter-attack for seemingly at all. Of 151 shots last season, only two of Mitrovic's shots came off a counter-attack. I'm not sure how they're going to create chances at the other end this season. And because of that, I'm not confident in Mitrovic. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not confident in any striker that is priced at 6.0 or below.
I was going to say, I mean, Hindu Monkey's Shay Adams train. I was surprised that that's been dismissed so readily in the Irish Quarter.
It's nothing against Shay Adams. It's nothing against the Shay train. It's just quite a simple. I had him at the start of last season and he left me down so badly. And he may have had a pretty good project restart. But Southampton were like Bournemouth. Every year I would have two or three of their attackers in my squad for some reason. Starting off the season, and they're always bad. Like they're just never good, except for Danny Ings, the one that I didn't put in my squad. They're always bad. It's just like I can't do it. I'll probably end up relenting and probably ending up with one of them in the team in the end because it always happens, and I'm always disappointed. But right now, none in.
I mean, I certainly have PTS dings in terms of Danny. I'm so used to seeing him scoring when I don't want him to score.
It's Chris's messages in the Slack. Dings! Three horrible, goal emojis.
Horrible. You see like a select group of people on Twitter celebrating. You're like, oh, for God's sake, not again. Obviously, that was my mistake, and more than happy to celebrate. It looks like I'm also going to be going about them. It looks like I will have maybe Shay Adams at the moment. But
how does that make you feel, Tom?
Just for kind of an insurance. I'm going to basically hope that the Twitter hype means that I can blame Hindu Monkey. He also tweets about politics, by the way. I don't think anyone mentions this ever. But he tweets a lot about politics. Worth calling that out. But last year, I really wanted to join in the Barnes train. I didn't. And so maybe I'm going to use the fact that he's convenient 6 million. It means that I can buy somebody, a few other players over. If I had Danny Ings, I'd have to make a few sacrifices. So at the moment, I'm going for the Che train. I'm not too sure about, I'm a reluctant passenger. You know, when you go and visit somebody, like a distant relative, that you're not really too sure about going to see, but you've got to go and do that journey. I feel like I'm that guy at the moment. Hopefully the likes of Mitrovic or whatever will prove themselves by game week 3 and I'll get off. Or even more hopefully, Shay will absolutely smash it and more than cover Danny Ings. I don't know. I think he'd be the one that I nominate at the moment. He's been the one I'm not too sure on. I think physically unwell is probably a bit strong. I think if I was rolling with the likes of Eric Dyer or Ben Davis, I might be looking at my team and thinking, oh, what the hell am I doing? But at the moment, I'm kind of okay with my team.
Emphasis on the loco in locomotive.
Indeed. Well, Hindi Monkey, complaints to him. Anyway, so to round off the podcast, do we want to disclose our teams and captains? I think that might be a quite interesting thing to do. I don't know if people do follow on Twitter. Normally, this point in time of year, we put in tweet teams up, etc., etc. Taking a leaf out of our general's book, as we all seem to be doing, and kind of being a bit, lying a bit low this year. I don't really want to put my team out there for general, not FPL general, but a general dissection, as it were. It changes up to last weekend. I didn't really change it that much. Now it's kind of changing every now and again. For example, today Nizar Kinsella tweeted that Havertz, who I really like from Fantasy Bundesliga, or into the eye test generally, is probably likely to be ready for game week 1. Ready meaning start, or ready meaning ready to come off the bench? I don't know, but he was with the German men's national team. So now he's come in over Werner, and my team's changed a little bit again. I don't think I'm going to go for it. My one bit of advice, as I said at the end of the first section, is just do whatever makes you happy. I think game week 1, you've got a pool of valid players. If you're into your FPL, you probably know who those are. If you want to go back to our pricing pod, if you're not too sure, do that, or find other kind of who to pick sort of articles, whatever, anywhere else. But within that kind of pool of players, just pick players that you think are going to do well and suit your strategy for the first few weeks, and hopefully that'll do the job for you. As you've heard, I'm going to be probably having a Manchester United player. Hopefully Martial doesn't have COVID or anything, but if he does, then I'll swap that out. But I'll have a Man United player come off the bench in game week 2. But I've got 4-4-2 going into 3-4-3 as it stands at this moment in time. Don't know if it's going to still be that way next week. And I'll be having Aubameyang game week 1 captain. I don't really believe in the early captaincy jinxy stuff I used to, and Nick set me straight very, very early on. If you did listen to that podcast way back at the beginning and know what I'm talking about. As for the team, it's going to shift around a lot, and I'll post it after deadline next Saturday. Nick, what are you doing?
So, yeah, I had a team already sent out for general dissection. You may have seen it on the OFPL account.
Mason got Mount, what are
you doing? Criticised for the inclusion of Mason Mount, and he was kind of in there before kind of Havertz stuff all properly kicked off, and that kind of changed my mind a little bit. I know that Mount's dad's been on Twitter saying that Mason's not upset that Havertz has joined the club, and that's rubbish, but enough of that. Back to my team. So as I said, I've kind of moved things a little bit around since then. It's broadly the same, but I got rid of Mount and put Saka in for Arsenal. I think he's potentially going to start. I think he's going to be a really good pick this season. I've used that money to kind of upgrade Brewster to Mitrovic, and that gives me a little bit more flexibility. I've still got a Doherty in defence as well at the moment, so there's quite a few interesting picks there. But I think Aubameyang's the captain. He's the key man with Salah and Vardy and Werner, so there's got four really strong players, and then Doherty and Alexander-Arnold, good defence, sort of the main defenders, the crux of the team, and then a few other sort of enablers sitting there, like some Mitro, like some James Justin, Sam Maximin. Hopefully they can do a job for the team coming as and when. Kind of didn't do it in quite order, but I pretty much named most of the players in my team there, if you can figure it out. Don't know if it'll change in the next few days. It's definitely not set in stone, but I guess reasonably happy right now.
I maintain the right to rip this completely up. There's an awful lot happening on the transfer front, COVID front as well. It's clearly catching up with players on international duty. All the games aren't even played yet. And like, I think you'll notice that there are definitely works in progress in this side. Maybe starting off, Tom might say, with the Rodak and Melier axis at the back. There's serious questions about whether it's a good idea to have two promoted goalkeepers at the back, but I find it interesting right now. Trent Alexander-Arnold won't be moving from my side. Maitland-Niles is in my defence right now. Will he play? Won't he play? Where is Hector Bellerin going? Is he staying in London? We don't know. So maybe he will move. I don't know. John Egan will probably stay in my side. Kyle Walker-Peters reluctantly making up my defence along with Wan-Bissaka, who I think will stay, but I may downgrade to Shaw if I feel confident he'll start every game for United. Midfield, Son, Aubameyang, who will stay no matter what. Salah, who I think is going to stay no matter what. And then I have Saka and Harrison Reed finishing out that midfield. Mitrovic, unfortunately, up top, he's not staying there, I don't think. Timo Werner. And right now, 5.0, Michael Obafemi. I'm getting flack from Southampton fans that he's not going to play. I was thinking, well, he's 5.0 and he will get a minute a game was pretty much the logic of it. And it was like, I didn't think he was going to be one of the first forwards to drop in price. And so I was like, he may stay in the squad. He's cheap, but he's not 4.5. And then it will just move forward from there. I have got the most quizzical looks from both of my co-hosts on Zoom here, which is saying that I definitely shouldn't have Obafemi, which is what all the Southampton fans are saying too. So I probably won't have Obafemi, folks. It's probably my Irish goggles getting the better of me.
It sounds like you've wasted £1 million. You've got a rotating goalkeeper you're never going to use and don't believe in. You've got Michael Obafemi. Get rid
what?
Of both
no,
of
no,
them.
No, I believe in both my rotating goalkeepers.
And then spend £1 million elsewhere.
I love my rotating goalkeepers.
The need to do a really wild card because you could make a better plan for yourself. Anyway, I'm telling you how to make my team.
Rotating goalkeepers are brilliant. Where's the issue with Rodak and Melier?
Madness. No. But I'm telling you how to make my team, so that's rubbish. And you should do what you want to do and what makes you happy.
We love you, Michael Obafemi. We love you. Right, okay, let's wrap it up. We were Who Got the Assist. Thanks so much for listening. If you're a new listener, please do subscribe. And if you have been with us before, please stick with us for the season and leave us a review if you've been enjoying us for a while. We'd love to get some reviews. We're a bit low on those on the old iTunes and elsewhere.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week after game week one. Reviewing the car crash, I'm sure, of our opening game weeks of the season. So I'm sure it'll be very exciting.
Rodak, penalty save. It's going to be great.
This is going to be good. Reminder as well of our mini league code. It's CPSULF if you want to join us this season.
Yep, thanks very much for listening during pre-season. We hope we assisted you pick your team, set up your strategy, etc., etc. Good luck
pick
in game...
Marek Rodak.
Don't pick Marek Rodak, but good luck in game week one, regardless of whether you do, and we'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.